welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast. Christmas is just mere moments, hours away, and bringing our own brand of festive spirit is myself, Stuart Court, and as ever, joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good, thank you. And yourself, all well?
Not too bad. Working in retail is a mother bitch on Christmas week, even though lockdown tier threes, tier fours, the rest of it is somehow busier than it is on a normal year. But yeah, not too bad.
But then a consolation working in catering is, yeah.
So yeah, the Seahawks went to Washington, went to the state capital, and they eventually stopped the count at 20-15 against the Washington football team, clinching another playoff spot. And all of Russell Wilson's years in Seattle, they've only failed to make the playoffs once. And it just continues a pretty impressive run, because making the playoffs in the NFL, although it's easier this year with seven teams making it, is a hard thing to do. And Pete Carroll, for all the faults and gripes that the fans may have with how he does things on a week-to-week basis, they're always in the shout at the end of December playing games in January with him in charge, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the fallout from that game, I did the post-game show again, and it's interesting the chat you have in the immediate aftermath of a game. And I think my main takeaway from it was that whatever your view on the Seahawks before the game, you could probably use that game to confirm any priors you had. I mean, if you are kind of, you know, the Pete Carroll can't win a game till the fourth quarter, you know, fan of that, then, you know, this is a classic, you know, Pete Carroll, 20-15, bad field, run the ball, you know, hit them in the mouth, that kind of game. And if you're not and you're against that, you're kind of thinking, what the hell's going on at 20-3? And then Logan Thomas, you know, has a pass to him from Dwayne Haskins for them to win the game. So I think it was one of those games that, depending on your outlook of the team going into it, you could pretty much easily shape an argument around the game to confirm what you already thought.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But 20-3, it kind of felt similar than the New York Giants game from 2 weeks before broke out for me. And it was horribly similar to that. Obviously, the defense had pretty much shut everything Colt McCoy, Dwayne Haskins had tried to do as a backup quarterback against it. But then obviously, because the offense wasn't started to get stuck in the mud a little bit, the defense threw, I don't know, just the change up from the Washington football team, or just lethargy or something went wrong. And yeah, then they started looking and getting up and down the field. But yeah, it's the third game in a row where it's been tough to like get overly excited and enthused about things happening. It was good to win. It was a gnarly encounter heading into it. But at 20-3, it was kind of, oh, this is one of those Seahawks. When I think Parker Lewis on Twitter pointing out that he had the theory that maybe the Seahawks blow teams out in threes, and at 20-3, it definitely looked on the cards. It just didn't happen. But the Seahawks ran the ball an awful lot and did it pretty well on Sunday. Carlos Hyde with the big 50-odd-yard touchdown run. Chris Carson just found hole after hole and was going at quite a gallop as well. I mean, Russell Wilson wasn't great, but he didn't seem to have much on his plate on Sunday for when the Seahawks kind of paced the scoreboard a bit, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, Carroll in his... I'm not sure if it was the post-match press conference or if it was one of the Monday interviews that he does. He said that he really loved the way the team played on Sunday. And again, like, I think that's probably open to interpretation depending on how happy you are with that style of offense. I mean, it's clearly part of his philosophy to play like that. I'm not convinced that that's the style that it's not going to win you a game against the Chiefs. I wouldn't have thought, whereby, you know, if you don't score 30, you're not going to win. But maybe that's, you know, arrogant looking ahead to a game which could only be the Super Bowl. But ultimately, that is probably the end of season target. So I don't really know what to take from it. I think ultimately, after the Giants game, it's a bit annoying that we had the Jets game, which was not even a game, and then this game straight after that, which is against, you know, it's not even against Alex Smith and Antonio Gibson, which could have caused, you know, you're a real test. It was kind of another game that's like, we just need to get through this. And then it's the Rams, which is a real game after the Giants. And I felt there's been quite a lot of frustration amongst the fan base in the last couple of weeks, which, you know, happens all the time anyway. The lack of like a real opposition. And I feel like everything's been looking to this Rams game where we are really going to find out what this team's made of.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But I just think everything was in there on the cards for the Seahawks to fall into a trap, quite literally. And it apart from the fourth quarter, whatever that was, it was a weirdly comfortable 2 hours, and then just a rather uncomfortable last 45 minutes or so. But yeah, the 26 rush attempts, 181 yards. It was 100, just short of 100 yards more than the Washington. I think he called them that their old name again. Washington managed on just 20 carries. Dwayne Haskins threw the ball 55 times, most of them to McKissick, well, in the direction of JD McKissick, Terry McLaurin, and Logan Thomas, who is weirdly a legitimate NFL tight end. But for the Seahawks receiving end, it was, well, obviously Russell Wilson didn't throw the ball that much, only completed 18 passes, 120 yards, a touchdown interception. But it was DK, Tyler, David Moore seemed to be more involved early and kind of disintegrated again somewhat from the game plan. But they just weren't asked to do much, were they? So the receiving kind of just made the plays when they were asked to, and then went missing for the rest of it.
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, how acceptable, for want of a better term, you think that is. I mean, the Jets have now scored in 8 successive opening drives to a game. Now, if Adam Gase can do that, that would suggest it's not a very difficult thing to do, just by the way in which his coaching career has gone. And, you know, I wonder that, you know, there should be no game where DK Metcalf has less than 10 targets. It just shouldn't happen. And he's currently averaging less than 8 targets a game across the season, which is, I think, like 15th or 16th in the league for receivers. Now, he's such a mismatch for people that just doesn't seem to make any sense. And he was getting that in the first 6-7 games of the season.
I don't think he was.
I think it was more, from the stats I was looking at, the average number has certainly dropped off in the last. I can see your eyes working, that you're obviously looking it up to check. But from memory of the stats I was reading, his target number has dropped off. And you know, Lockett is probably playing through an injury right now, which is why we're not seeing as much of him. But I just wonder how acceptable you think it is, that, you know, the way in which they're playing on offense, and you know, whether you're happy with it.
Sunday was completely fine because, as I said, for 3 and a bit quarters, the running game was doing whatever the hell they wanted to. Carlos Hyde with obviously the long one. He had 55 yards on 2 carries and 50 of them were on one. But yeah, like when the offense needed to make a play, when they started to show signs of life with their couple of scores in the fourth, it would have been nice to see him pop up a few times. But I think, I don't know, there was just that usual end of game Seahawks fret. FRET. It wasn't really so much a panic or concern or worry. It kind of just felt like the offense was just going to be able to make that one play if they needed to. It just happened that they didn't, and the defense made it. But Metcalf has been targeted, Adam, 8-6, 8-6, 11-5, 15-9, 4-5, 13, 8-8-6 so far this season. He went the first 4 games of the season with just 4 catches in each, but he managed to go above 90 yards in all 4 of them. So it's been a bit, he was a big play guy at the start. His yards per catch has fell off a cliff. He was 23, 23, 27, 26, and he hasn't gone above 18 since. So yeah, that aspect of it, but I think that's been an offensive wide thing where the big plays have kind of fell off, some just disappeared, maybe because of how teams are starting to defend Russell Wilson's shot and I'm at and the DK Tyler connection. But yeah, I think this week is the test. I think what happened after the Seahawks game, what happened with the Rams on Sunday evening, is interesting, more interesting than anything that happened for the Seahawks over the past, definitely the past 2 weeks, I think, Adam.
Have you watched the show The Good Place?
I watched like 4 episodes at the start of lockdown.
So for the listeners who haven't seen it, The Good Place is a show. This isn't really a spoiler, I think. It's been out long enough for me to kind of talk about the premise of it. It's a show that the people in it think it's set in heaven, but it's actually set in hell. So a lot of things that seem like they're good are actually bad. So the every street corner of where they're living is populated with a frozen yogurt shop, which on the face of it, you're like, oh, that's really good. But actually then you realize that frozen yogurt is just not that good and it's not as good as ice cream. So it's actually bad. For me, The Good Place is the end around to David Moore, because you see an end around happening and it is objectively the most fun play, I think. Like Percy Harvin's end around in Super Bowl 48 is
two of them.
Yeah, two of them. But the first one particularly is probably my top 10 Seahawk plays for like, oh my God, what's about to happen? And every time I see one, I'm like, oh my God, it's an end around. It's going to be so cool. And then it's David Moore running through treacle. And so, yeah, there's stuff like that that I just find weird, like how much of an established David Moore appears to be in the play script in the first 15 plays. And I just can't really get my head around it.
It is quite strange. It's almost like the Eagles game, recover from the Eagles game just to, it can work. but yeah, it often not doesn't. David Moore is really strange because, again, in this early part of the season, him in space was how he was getting his yards and getting involved. And now him in space, he's just, it's like Brian Waters' punt return. Yeah, so I'm guessing it's an injury thing because he was on the injury report for a few weeks. But defensively on Sunday, they made the play at the end. DJ Reed was, I think, Arif Hassan has named him one of his players of the week for last week. He was matched up more often. I got more often or not against Terry McLaurin, who is, it seemed, was somewhat of coverage proof. It didn't really matter who was up against him, but McLaurin had one of his quietest games of the season, especially when the volume of targets were so high for him. He had 12 targets, 7 catches for 77, which sounds good, but McLaurin in this offense, that's a quiet day for him. And a lot of that was because of DJ Reed, who I think with a lot of people criticized the college scouting and college miscues that the draft has bought for the Seahawks over the last 4 or 5 years, but they're pro scouting, man. Their pro scouting is on it. And DJ Reed is already arguably one of the biggest hits they've had in that regard, because obviously he's waived in preseason by the 49ers because he was injured and going to miss the first couple of months of the season. He was waived so they could sign Jamar Taylor, who was obviously was a player for the Seahawks last year, should we say, but he has come up the last month and he is now with what's come out today with Quinton Dunbar and his season being done, he is the starting right cornerback opposite Shaquille Griffin for the Seahawks, which is wild, Adam.
Yeah, I think Pete Carroll said that it was the best game the team have had from a cornerback for a long time. Carroll that said that, it was someone else fairly prominent that said that.
Yeah, he definitely said this season.
And it's hard to disagree.
No, McLaurin is legitimate top 10 wide receiver in the league. He eats. One, because he is, Logan Thomas has emerged last month, but he is the only target whoever's at quarterback for Washington have. So that helps, but he's still him. The 2019 draft class wide receiver is insane. It's DK, you got AJ Brown, you've got Hollywood Brown, who's kind of up and down a bit this year in that Ravens offense, but McLaurin is right there with them. He is so, so good, and he was in his back pocket most of the game.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah. Jamal Adams shot out of a cannon on a third down stop of Dwayne Haskins. Adam, Ugo Amadi made some couple of nice plays. But again, for the second time in a few weeks, Carlos Dunlap makes the fourth down end game play. Those two plays alone are worth the trade value on itself. We said that a few weeks ago, and he's just gone and done it again, Adam.
Yeah, he's been I think the sack numbers of the team in general since he joined, you'll probably do me over with another stat that I've got wrong. Yeah. But I think the stat numbers since he's joined are fairly significantly higher than before he joined. And even LJ Collier, old bloody LJ, I think it's his third big play that he's made this season in crunch time. So good luck to him as well. I mean, he's certainly not outperformed his first round draft pick, and he shouldn't have been a first round pick. But ultimately, we've got three big plays from him now.
Yeah, but also he was like 28th. It's basically not the first round.
Sure.
Anyone else you want to pay mention to on either side of the ball from Sunday?
Anyone else? I have a feeling KJ Wright did something really good, but I can't remember because it just feels like it was a lifetime ago, that game. Yep. Puna Ford, I thought, had a good game again.
Yeah.
Jaron Reed, I didn't see until he was dancing on the sideline at the end of the game. which is becoming slightly more concerning with the amount of money that he's earning. another sack for Jamal Adams when he chased down Dwayne Haskins on the sidelines. It almost feels like a bit of a cheap... Oh, no, he did actually sack him, didn't he? But it does feel a bit of a cheap sack that if the quarterback runs out of bounds behind the line of scrimmage, the nearest defender gets credited with a sack, just as a general point for you.
Yeah, but Jamal did tackle him, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he did tackle him. He did, but it was one of those that, like, yeah, he tackled him. Yeah, legitimate tackle. Yeah. And yeah, I didn't think there was anything. It was just like a game. Do you know what I mean? It was just...
Yeah, it just happened.
The most forgettable game. The best thing about it was the sideline cameras.
Oh, they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. I sent one to a mate because he's into all that cameras and stuff. He didn't care. He goes, oh, wildlife have been shooting that way for years. I was like, yes, but look, that's real human beings after... Like, it's impressive, sure.
Yeah, live shots.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, the 14th time in 18 seasons that the Seahawks have qualified for the postseason. It's just remarkable, I think. DK Metcalf became the third player in franchise history with 1,200 or more receiving yards. He's just 64 yards short of Steve Largent's 35-year franchise record, and he needs five. If he gets it in four catches, he'd get there quicker in terms of receptions as well than Largent did back in 1985. And DK passed on Sunday Adam Jermaine Kearse after just 30 regular season games. He's already in the top. He's 14th all time for Seahawks receiving. It's ridiculous. I think we spoke about this a few times, though. We didn't really appreciate Aloe B and Sherm and Earl and Cam and Cliff and Bennett and Marshawn and the Doug Baldwin and the rest of it. Like, people need to realize what we're watching with DK Metcalf, don't they?
Yeah, he's a phenom.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it. He's unlike anyone that we've had on, you know, probably in franchise history.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Just find your word pro football reference and just read the, just find different ways to put him near the top. I've got a question
for you. Just like Russell Wilson in general, what you think of him? I mean, right now, the last 6-7 games, probably since the bye, we're probably getting like league average quarterback play, given the fact that there's a lot of quarterbacks that are playing very well right now, which does help skew that. And in another season, it might still be top 10, top 12. But where Wilson was carrying the team through games at the start of the year, that's patently not happening anymore. And there are other players stepping up and making a difference. Now, obviously, when you win, you can't really win with the quarterback playing badly, per se. But against the Eagles, you know, against the football team, it would be hard to say that it was like a Wilson superstar performance like the Cowboys, Patriots, Vikings, Vikings, Falcons game. What do you make of Wilson at the moment? Because for me, it's like you need to get better, but it's quite good to see other players in the team stepping up and getting things done.
Yeah, I think it's since the Buffalo game where things have kind of, well, during the Buffalo game as well, things looked a bit different with Russell Wilson. But at the same time, 23, 21, 17, 17, 3, 15. That's what the defense have given up since the Buffalo game. He hasn't really needed, because before that, when you talked about the Patriots game, the Patriots scored 30 points. The Cowboys scored 31. The Cardinals, that the game they lost, the Cardinals scored 37. I mean, he's not, again, like Sunday's perfect, encapsulate everything for Russell Wilson. He didn't have to do much at the minute. The concern is he hasn't been asked to really do a lot, schedule allowing as well, with the team, obviously Eagles, Giants, Jets, Washington in a row. He hasn't needed to, but he's probably going to need to definitely this weekend and probably the first playoff game and onwards. That's the concern, is if he can. The Bear quarterbacks who are playing the best in this league, apart from Aaron Rodgers, they're all in the AFC.
Mm. But I guess my question is, do you, like when Mahomes and they went to Buffalo and just Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran the show and they just ran it all the way, all night, and Mahomes didn't do anything. Mm. Mahomes didn't have to do anything and they won. Yeah. But the next week, you're like, well, it's Mahomes. He's going to be fine. Do you think Wilson is fine right now? Like, do you think he can do against the Rams what he did at the start of the season? Because I'm slightly concerned by some tendencies that I'm seeing from him right now where he just looks a bit scattish in the pocket.
Yeah, I think he can. I think he, if he will on Sunday is, yeah, I think Sunday's far from ideal for him to do it. But I think in the playoffs and when the teams who are more than likely to face in the first couple of, or in the first in the wild card game, whatever, I think he can do it. I don't know. I don't think he's got. Obviously, this defense isn't 2013, but I think the defense could give him 2013 responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the 23-21 that run of points given up for the defense is the biggest plus point for any sort of deep Seahawk playoff run. And the fact that, touch wood, that it's pretty healthy. Obviously, they've lost Quinton Dunbar for the season, but we talked about DJ Reed stepping up. Trey Flowers is now back activated. Brian Monet, who was pretty good for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, he's back in the building as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that defense is healthier than it's probably been all season. So the fact that they kind of turn the corner, they kind of... Yeah, like, I don't think he's going to be asked to do much. I think he can if he is asked to do much, if the defense does give up 27, 30, 33 points. But yeah, I'm not overly confident that he will. Definitely. I don't see us scoring 30 plus on Sunday. I think I answered your question in a roundabout way.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So I actually want to, I'm not sure if you saw the post that I made on
the
Facebook group. And I thought this might be quite a good time to bring it in as almost like a little halfway through the chat. So I posted, and you haven't given me your answer yet, so I'm quite interested to hear it. So the question is, you get to pick the weather and stadium conditions, bowl, turf, roof open, etc., for the whole playoffs. Every game is played in the same conditions right up to the Super Bowl. This is for all teams, every game. What conditions do you pick to give the Seahawks the best chance to win the whole thing, given that your rivals will have to play in the same circumstances? And we had some really good responses. We had Mark Woodcock, a loyal listener. Typical Pacific Northwest conditions are replicated at Lambeau Field, except it's worse. So sorry to be a killjoy, but I don't see anyone going to Tampa if the Packers are number one seed the way they're playing. Also, the Titans visit and go to Soldier Field. They probably won't lose either of the fixtures. Some people say no one's going to beat Green Bay. I think that's a weather thing. When we lead at halftime, can we call it a win and end the game? That seems like a pretty good stipulation. I like that a lot. Thomas Meller, as previously mentioned, Pacific Northwest conditions preferable. Some nice rain to make it a running game. Open roof, single-digit temperatures. Jack Rayner, definitely not Lincoln Field in the wind. So I think he doesn't want to. Well, Wilson's never particularly good in the wind, so that makes sense. Derek Matthews, it would suit this offense to be in a dome with dry handling conditions for the receivers and no wind to affect the ball. Agree with that. Jack Rayner agrees. Dan Cohen, he's finally got his mention. Dome, dry, no wind. Our offense in those conditions will outscore everyone. But then Mahomes also gets those conditions. And also someone even like Drew Brees, kind of in his condition, you know, those are his conditions. Gordon Wright, open stadium, rainy, slight wind. Andy Robertson, night game, light drizzle, turf moor, which could be slightly difficult to organize. But Tim Jordan goes on the same thing and asks every game to be played at Wembley. To help him. So, yeah, fine. I live 10 minutes from Wembley. That'd be great. And Jason Long, 60 degrees, dry, turf and outdoors. So, Stuart Court, the floor is yours. I give you the same question and I'm fascinated by your answer.
I think Cliff Averill kind of said this when we had him on way back when coronavirus was a six-week thing. Whatever the conditions were at MetLife Stadium in that February evening, it was perfect.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, everything was perfect. I don't remember it being that windy. It was cold, but not too cold. It was like there wasn't any rain. The air was just right, just thick enough. I think Cliff Averill kind of said, obviously, they talked about being stuck on the plane the morning after because of a snowstorm. But whatever the conditions were at MetLife Stadium that evening, it's just, it's good juju, which is not a phrase heard much this week after TikTok. But yeah, like whatever the Met Office said for that evening in February in 2014, yeah, just play there forever because it clearly worked and was perfect for that situation.
So from a mind games perspective, because obviously let's say you're the Kansas City Chiefs and you get to choose that, you would obviously choose the best conditions for Mahomes because you feel that if Mahomes plays really well, you're almost certainly going to win. My question is with this, like, if everyone else gets perfect conditions, does that help you win the Super Bowl?
See, you mentioned Drew Brees. I think Drew Brees has helped massively, especially the last 2.5-3 years by playing in the dome.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't mean cold for Brees. I meant in the dome.
Yeah, I think that it's perfect for him. I don't think Mahomes matters. Like, I think Drew Brees is very... I love Jimmy Anderson, but Jimmy Anderson gets a lot of wickets in England swing conditions. Drew Brees, his swing conditions is a super... Like, he's not going to be... I think Mahomes is Shane Warne.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly wouldn't choose every game to play in a dome and make it a track meet with the team that we are against other teams.
No.
I just wonder if you might want a bit of rain to kind of nullify some of your opponents.
Yeah.
Because Wilson's good in the rain, but not good in the wind.
Yeah, he's fine. Well, last time in Seattle, it was raining and Lamar Jackson went wild.
That's true.
So, yeah, no, you wouldn't want it in a dome every week. It'd be boring. I mean, I literally think the perfect place to play would be Seattle, late October Seattle, but... I don't know. But whatever the weather was in New York that evening would be ideal, because I literally think it was perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of
ClearoPod, you've done a brilliant job on the best of 2020, and I do encourage anyone to go and listen to that, because, Stu's done a fantastic job piecing together some stuff and a lot of really good interviews this year, I have to say.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Like, I didn't realize we had so. We've done obviously we've done 37 episodes now since our 100th one last October in Seattle with Jess and up at 710. So it's for a season that didn't really happen until July, August, especially this year. It's pretty good. 37 episodes in 13 and a half months. So yeah, it's pretty good going. It's fun, and obviously I've managed to get some of my favorite. Hip-hop adjacent tracks on the bed as well, so it was fun to find a reason to put Loyal Kana and Anderson .Paak on a ped pod bit. But yeah,
we look forward to the lawsuit.
It will not be going on YouTube because it will be removed swiftly, which is also one reason why the intro music on this pod changed about 2 years ago. Yeah, so the Rams on Sunday night. It's 4:25 kickoff. It's on Sky Sports yet again. Buck, Aikman, Andrews are on the call, which I know they get a lot of criticism. And listening to Aikman commentate on Cowboys games is annoying, but they're so good at what they do.
I actually think Aikman's been great this year. Like
him doing the Cowboys game is hilarious.
Well, he cares.
Yeah, no, but it's hilarious the same way Steve McManaman doing a Liverpool game. It's not hilarious.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the anti Alan Smith doing Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he doesn't say we, which is great to him. But I think Aikman's got better. Joe Buck is just brilliant. I love listening to Joe Buck do any sport. I think how he does everything is, yeah. It's him and Adam Amin. But Rams Sunday night, they will forever be the answer to the quiz question, who did the New York Jets beat to make them miss out on Trevor Lawrence, which is something. But, I mean, of all the Jared Goffs, that's never going to be bettered, is it? I mean, even scoring just 3 points in the Super Bowl, that was against Belichick. That on Sunday was, I mean...
It's going to be compounded if he scores 45 points on Sunday like he always normally does against us in his Tim Krull fashion.
I know, but can we just, like, for the next, I don't know, 90 seconds, just enjoy how bad that was? I mean, like, there's been criticism on the offense for the Seahawks. The Seahawks put 400 yards and 40 points on that Jets defense.
Yeah.
They barely got to 20.
They were hopeless. I mean, they were a bit unlucky with a couple of holding plays that pulled a couple of long Cam Akers runs back, but they were absolutely hopeless.
But also, the Rams have been getting away with holding plays for about 4 years.
True.
So they were due. It was hilarious. It was so good. My mate is a Rams fan, did actually call it. Like, the Jets are hopeless. He goes, yeah, but that's a team we usually struggle against. I did not expect. I think I had them in my accumulator, and it was minus 17 was the handicap. So, yeah.
I never touched those games.
I did not see that coming. I thought the Rams were going to score more than 40 on them. I thought, Jared Goff, man.
No. But he's fucking useless. But we've been saying this for years. But he keeps beating the Seahawks.
So Sunday, Jared Goff, Cam Akers. I think did I see he's injured?
Oh. Yeah, he's done his ankle.
So it's Darrell Henderson again and Malcolm Brown. Cooper Kupp is nearing another 1,000-yard season. Well, we know what we're going to face. They're going to be ticked off. Sean McVay, if Jared Goff continues doing this into next season, no matter what they do for the next 6-7 weeks of this season, it's going to be fascinating to watch, I think.
Well, with the number of quarterbacks coming into the league, they've had the last three drafts have added quarterbacks that look like they could be league starters. And
yeah,
when next year's draft happens, you're looking at pretty much every team in the NFL you would say has a quarterback that could win them a Super Bowl, maybe apart from the Rams and the 49ers.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you could talk about Big Ben. Maybe he's not a guy anymore that can do it. Maybe the Saints. But there's extenuating circumstances when you've got team legends.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at any quarterback under the age of 35 who's a starter, it's probably Goff and Garoppolo are the two left that you just would not think there's any way they could win you a Super Bowl. Like someone like Matt Stafford, I would say, could win you a Super Bowl 100% if you put good pieces around him.
Yeah.
But Goff and Garoppolo probably had the best teams they'll ever have around them.
Goff definitely has. Goff, like, I think Pete Carroll said it already this week, like four times. They've got the best player in the league on the opposite side of the ball to Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Like, that should carry them enough to, like, we've just talked about the Seahawks defense in 2013 and this kind of being similar, like, responsibilities. Jared Goff does not have to. I think Jordan Rodriguez, she said, like, no quarterback is asked to do as little as Jared Goff is asked to do by Sean McVay. Like, there's literally four plays they call.
And this is the fourth year of walking to the line, standing up, listening to the McVay, what he wants to do, and then doing it.
Yeah, and it's as bad as it's been.
Yeah.
With three running backs who can all churn yards. I mean, Malcolm Brown isn't great, but Cam Akers looks really good eventually. Darrell Henderson just always seems to just get 60 yards and in a flash. And you got Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, you got Josh Reynolds, who looks quite good. You got Van Jefferson, who's a nice rookie. You got Higbee and Everett doing bits at tight end. And yet the quarterback is the worst one in the NFC West.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. But that's what I mean. I think
you'd love to know what McVay actually thinks about the situation, because he's not stupid, far from it. He must know what the issue is.
Yeah, I think he does. And that's what I mean. I think we've started to see, like, the patience grow thin. And I think no matter what they do for the next 7 weeks, if they are by Thanksgiving next year and he's still turning the ball over, he's still just crumbling at the merest sign of a pass rush, as he did on Sunday. The conversations teams are having, the Eagles are going to have over next month, the Carson Wentz, is exactly what they're going to have with Jared Goff, because they've invested a lot of money, and but they're going to have to keep investing in these players who they've drafted and have hit on. I mean, they've got Taylor Rapp, who looks quite good. They've got John Johnson, who looks quite good. They've got the guy who intercepted Russ twice down in LA, I can't remember his name, a couple weeks ago, who's looked quite good. He's a rookie, so he's a bit further off. But like you said, Jared Goff's best Ram team has been and gone.
Yeah.
Because Brock is not going to be around for much longer. You can't see him keeping Kupp and Woods.
No.
Past 2022.
And also, like, if fans hopefully come back into the stadium in September, and the Rams have an early playoff loss, maybe not, I think they'll probably make the playoffs, but if they have an early playoff loss, are those owners really going to want to open the stadium properly with Jared Goff as the quarterback, when Justin Herbert is the other guy who now looks like the star of LA?
Yeah.
It's just not going to want to happen.
No. I mean, like, you know more than most what a Cronkey Stan Kroenke own team with bad eggs, looks like, Adam. So,
and you do absolutely love to see it.
So yeah, so it's gonna be interesting. Like, Jared Goff is garbage, and yeah. I think everyone is starting to realize it. But the most important person to realize that is, as we say, someone who's rightly touted as one of the best defensive coaches in the league. I mean, like, Sean McVay is the smartest defensive coach. Oh, he's definitely top two in the league, maybe three in the league. And Kyle Shanahan has his number. And a big part of that is because Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh know exactly how to defend against that offense. But more importantly, with that D-line the 49ers have, apart from this year, without Bosa, is because he just get in his shadow, and Goff just completely just mounts down. And that's going to be the biggest thing on Sunday, I think, because if Carlos Dunlap is obviously more at full tilt. Jamal Adams played with one arm in LA. Shaquille Griffin did not play at all in LA. This kind of feels like if you'd have asked me 10 days ago to see what's going in the NFC West, I was like, no, that ain't happening. But now it would be a letdown if they didn't, I think.
Yeah, well, it all comes down to Sunday, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, like, they can seal the division on Sunday, but even if they lose, there's still a way. I mean, I'm guessing the Rams have got Cardinals in week 17. That's not,
I think, the Rams conclusion. Because the Rams lost against the Jets, they've taken on the position that we had, whereby we would have had to win the last two, yeah. Whereas they now have to win the last two to win the division.
Yeah, I think our probability of division is switched. I think it's like 65% mm-hmm. that we win the NFC West now, which, like, yeah, like 10 days ago, at the end of the Giants game, it looked like the furthest thing. It looked like the 3% chance of missing the playoffs was more likely than the 97% chance of making it. But yeah, like, defense is like reaching a crescendo, I kind of think, and all the pieces being healthy, DJ Reed is probably settled down the opposite side to Shaquille Griffin, which is relatively important. Ugo Amari is playing well the last couple of weeks, and obviously he's has one more cheesecake thanks to the bet he won against Pete Carroll because of the Ducks winning the Pac-12. I don't know why, but I think the Seahawks are going to win on Sunday.
Let's pick it.
I think they're going to win 26-16.
Ooh, nice. I was going to go a bit more high scoring, and for the sake of, I don't really know who, I don't have a great steer, but I never do. That's why I don't ever win when I gamble. I'll go 31-27, Seattle.
Yep, you never do win when there's 101 goals in the Football League and we managed to pick 2-0.
Unbelievable from us.
Yeah. Although, well, not that surprising. Yeah, I don't know why. A wild take would be, I really do think there's going to be a fumble or pick six on Sunday. A fumble six or pick six. I really want Puna Ford to get one, but I'd also love it if, I don't really care who actually got one against Jared Goff. I don't think I would enjoy anything more this season is if we saw John Wofford take a snap at quarterback for the Rams, who was the quarterback at Wake Forest who made Kendall Hinton switch to wide receiver. And he is a legitimate quarterback, and he's better than Jared Goff.
Let's say, as long as it's not because they're kind of doing...
It's not Geno Smith mic'd up being startled by Pete Carroll the time he's going in. It's because Sean McVay has had enough of Jamal Adams and Shaquille Griffin getting the ball from Jared Goff throws. If we see John Wofford on Sunday, then 2020 ain't all that bad.
You'll be on the pitch.
No, I'll be on the pitch in the room. I'll be watching the gaming. But also, like we talked about booking Aitman, I don't think there'll be anyone better for if Jared Goff struggles to be on the commentary for.
Yeah, apart from Romo, maybe. Yeah. Romo, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah, anything else?
No, bin time.
Okay, go.
No, I'm going to let you go first because I think you've got one, and if not, I'll do one that I'm thinking it might be the same.
Don't have one.
Okay, I'll do it. The NFL are absolutely scapegoating Josh Gordon here.
Yep.
And the way in which he's been treated, which I think is the second time now where he's had a long-term recovery, he's about to play, and then they pull the plug on it, I think is nothing short of disgraceful. And for me, given... Well, look, there's one argument, Antonio Brown, Dan Snyder, Tyreek Hill, Joe Mixon, there's that argument, should they be in the league if Josh Gordon can't? The other argument is their drug policy is maybe patchy at the best of times. And for me, what it looks like is they are using Josh Gordon to make an example of him because they know he's not probably going to be an NFL star again, but he's a big enough name for people to take notice. And for me, this is scapegoating of a player. And if there was any recourse to take legal action against the league, I wish Gordon would do something because I think he's been strung along here and the intention's always been to fuck him at the end. And I think it's disgraceful.
Yep. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of chat in Premier League from managers who only make one substitution about player welfare. And I don't think there is any better place for Josh Gordon to be than on the field for the Seahawks with Pete Carroll as his head coach. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Gordon himself has realised that. I think the team have realised that. I think that's one reason he's still in the vicinity of being a Seahawk this year. And I think, it's a joke. Like, the energy paid to Josh Gordon from the league or to Dwayne Haskins in Washington and the league is just nonsense with some of the stuff which they let go on. Ray Lewis is in the Hall of Fame, for fuck's sake. Yeah. Yeah, like, it's disgraceful. Like, it's a player welfare should be of paramount importance. He's clearly someone who has issues, so put him in situations where helping most, and it clearly helps him to a certain extent when he's playing and he's on the hamster wheel of an NFL season. But they just it's the whole radar is off with this, and it's a joke. Like, it's legal in most places where, I mean, was it Tony Romo 5 years ago was suspended or fined for putting his name to a fantasy football gambling sport betting thing, and now every week, every game is about bad beats in Vegas and stuff, and you got FanDuel and DraftKings, and fantasy football has more air hours on Sirius XM satellite radio, talk radio in America, and anything else to do with American football. So it's just like they just can't get out of their own way, and it's sad. Like, I think a lot of Seattle journalists tweeted when it broke that Gordon was not eligible again to play this week. It's just sad because the guy clearly has issues, and the best way to deal with those issues is to put him in the building and, like I said, put him on that hamster wheel. And the league are going out of their way to not put him on the field when Antonio Brown was catching a touchdown Sunday night.
Couldn't agree more. I've got another I've got another one. It's pathetic when Matthew Berry and Michael Fabiano go against players, like when Berry had a go last week at Josh Jacobs for damaging the fantasy brand community with his Instagram story about not playing and ruining people's weeks. That's pathetic. However, Raheem Mostert went in on fantasy players this week for we don't care about your fantasy team, and that's totally fine. And I don't expect you to care about my fantasy team or anyone's fantasy team. What I would suggest, however, is an enormous percentage of the league's popularity right now is in part linked to fantasy football. And someone like Raheem Mostert is known to all NFL fans. I would imagine a lot of it because a lot of people pick him in fantasy football and therefore look out for his results and scores. And I don't, players are well within their rights not to care, but I would just be slightly cautious about realizing what side your bread's buttered on, because I think part of the reason that you get paid some of the fees that you do are the fan engagement in part that does come with fantasy football. So that's another, I wouldn't say it's a bin. It's maybe
a note of caution.
Yeah. Keep an eye on this, Raheem, before we put the trash can on you.
Yeah, one reason Red Zone is so good is because of fantasy football.
It's the reason it's good.
I don't have a baseball fantasy team. I've only had two, and they were terrible because it's baseball and it's a really long season. Care to have a baseball Red Zone because I don't have a baseball fantasy team. So be careful what you wish for, but at the same time,
Get in his mentions.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
That's pathetic. But maybe just block notifications for people you don't follow, Raheem, and you can block out the noise, because that is obviously bollocks. No one deserves that. Yeah. But there is a reason why things are so popular, and fantasy, I would say, has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, no, sorry, I just noticed something. So I'm on the Seahawks 2020. It's a complete tangent. Joe Fan is rubbing off on us a week later. So the last 16 touchdowns to see what was given up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How many were a wide receiver?
I feel like Cole Beasley got one. The Cardinals was running backs and Chase Edmonds, I think. I'm going to go two.
It's one. Gabriel Davis in the second quarter, a four-yard pass from Josh Allen. Since then, it's been running back, quarterback, running back, running back, running back, running back, tight end, running back, tight end, tight end, running back, running back, running back, running back. Weirdly impressive.
Yeah, good statting.
Yeah, no, that's what happens. That's the tangent of it. All it's saying.
Way to finish.
Yeah, I think that's all. Nothing really of note. Anything else? I mean, the biggest thing in the NFL this weekend was Trevor Lawrence is going to end up working for Tony Khan and in that much better looking uniform in Jacksonville than the Jets. Until if you want to get in touch with the podcast, we do appreciate all the comments we had from Adam's post and everything else over the past few days. If you want to catch that best of thing I did, it is on the post. On Spotify and Podbean and iTunes and all the rest of it if you missed it a few days ago. But yeah, until next time, have anyone listening in whatever part of the world, enjoy your Christmas and enjoy the game on Sunday night. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Jamal, first time going to the playoffs. I know you have two games left.
Hell yeah! That's a hell of a feeling, man. I'm sorry. I'm not used to this, guys. Forgive me. I know you guys are used to, you know, Seattle, you know, always going to the playoffs. I'm not used to this. I'm used to sending my cars home by this time. And, you know, hey, I'm already packing up, learning where I'm going next. Where's the vacation? When am I seeing family? Sorry to cut you off, brother. I'm just excited, man. So God is good.